Well, I'm absolutely delighted. I'm really chuffed that Billy Pearce is joining me on the Godcast today. Many of you will know Billy's face from the television and from his fantastic career as a comedian and an actor, pantomime and lots of things. He was a regular on the telly, particularly in the 80s and the 90s, and a good old earthly Yorkshireman. It looks like we're joining him from, I think it's the next sale, Billy. How are you doing?
I'm all right, mate. I'm considering, everything that's happened.
Everything.
Yes, I'm fine, actually. Yeah, thank you very much for asking. And yourself, I hope you're all right as well.
Yeah, I'm okay. I did have COVID, but I've recovered well from it, so that's been in.
Oh, did you? Oh, heck. All right, mate. Yes, I'm glad you've recovered.
So where's home, Billy? Where are you?
Well, I live in the north of England, near Leeds. Or Wakefield, which is a place called Tingley. I only moved here because it sounds funny. So yes, it's in Cloth Caps and Braces land. It's where the M1 goes cobbled.
Is that
Yeah.
Oh, we're off. Well, I'll tell you something. If you're tuning in for a laugh, you've come to the right place because Billy has got.
I don't know about that, mate. I've forgotten how to have a laugh.
Oh, I was going to say, Billy, how's it? You know, I mean, for a guy whose career and job is to make people laugh. I mean, been short of laughs, haven't we, in the last year or so? I mean, I like to find humour in most things, but even for me, I find it a struggle. What about yourself?
I've been feeling mixed feelings. It's a bit like watching your mother-in-law drive off a cliff in your brand new Mercedes. But it has been mixed feelings, and I've been, obviously up and down, fed up and depressed and all that. I've done this for 50 years, making people laugh. So you'd think I'd have a better act, really. I've been feeling a bit like Superman, Superman. Somebody stuck a big block of kryptonite down my knickers, and now I'm not Superman anymore. I'm just man, because
Billy,
the techno powers away. It's what I've done all my life. It's what I've become used to, and entertaining people and everything. So if you take that away, it's been, a bit like for everybody, it's caused problems, really,
and
mentally
Billy,
and financially. And
yeah,
where
and
are you from, Alex?
well, I'm in Burnley, Billy, in Lancashire. So I was about to
Yeah,
say you've got an affinity
is
with
that the
Lancashire.
only accent then?
Well, it is. I've lived here all my life. I'm a Burnley lad, but me dad was a southerner, so I kind of drift in and out from time to time.
Okay,
But
I couldn't quite work it out.
I've lived in Burnley since I was four, and I'm 26 now. So no, I'm 51 now. So, but Billy, you've got a bit of an affinity with Lancashire, haven't you? I mean, just talk about your relationship with Blackpool for us for a minute, because I mean, it's been good to you, hasn't it?
Oh, Blackpool, of course. I've been associated with Blackpool all my life, really, and right from the days of doing the clubs in the 1970s. I wanted to get to Blackpool, and I was lucky enough to do the Blackpool Grand Theatre for 20 years in summer seasons and pantomimes and stuff. So I've loved Blackpool. I met my wife in Blackpool. She was a dancer at the North Pier, and what can I say about Blackpool? It means a lot to me, Blackpool.
Yeah, I know. Billy, what show was she in on the North Pier? Can you remember?
What's my, I'm sorry, Alex.
Show was she in, your wife, on the North Pier? Can you remember what it
Oh, she
was?
was a dancer, and she was with Sue Pollard, Les Dennis,
Yeah.
Mark Walker's dad, Roy
Oh,
Walker.
yeah.
It was a lovely show, and we met at the bar afterwards, and then we met up a couple of times and basically started going out together, and we've been together ever since. I'm very lucky to have a lovely lady like that in my life, and she looks after me now, basically.
She's your carer, is she?
Here she is, actually. To be honest, I'm 3 years older than her dad. I know that may not sound very good, but we've been together 20 odd years. Our son's going to be 21 this year. So, I'm amazed he survived.
Oh, Billy, you know, it's just lovely to smile. It's been such a long time since I've had a...
That's what it's all about, mate. It's all about that. It's a wonderful gift to be able to laugh. And it does people a lot of good to be able to laugh.
Yeah. Bill, I say this with huge respect. I didn't realise you were of a certain vintage, to be honest. I just thought you were... You've got that youthful look about you, haven't you? I'm not going to... It's up to you if you want to tell our listeners.
I think you need a new set of glasses, mate. You definitely do. My eyesight's good, and I keep running into pubs. Well, not at the moment, of course. Uh-huh. Although today we can, apparently.
Yeah. And Billy, you're heading back to Blackpool. I was noticed you've got some dates there soon, haven't you?
My first date back is on the 30th of May at the Opera House, or the Winter Gardens, in Blackpool, in a variety show with my mate Bobby Davro and Sean Williamson and a lovely comedy act. And I can't remember the names, to be honest, I'm so ashamed. But I'm looking forward to that with trepidation, because all I can remember is good evening. Because I haven't worked for so long. So I'm looking forward to that and getting back on the stage. It'll do me good, to be honest.
I'm sure it will. Billy, were you a funny kid? Have you just got naturally funny bones?
I think my comedy always got me out of trouble. I don't remember being particularly funny, although I had always loved making people laugh. I remember there was a girl in my class at school, and she was called Beryl Orchard. So her actual initials were B.O. And we had this reunion, and she said that I was in the class pretending to do fart noises, and she got the blame for it, unfortunately. She reminded me of that. So I have always got out of trouble with my comedy, put it that way.
Was there any religion in your life, Billy, as a young lad? Were you made to go to church and stuff, or?
I was frightened to death you were going to ask me that.
Mm. Well, I've asked you now.
You have, yes. Well, I was brought up in the Church of England, and we used to go to Sunday school, obviously on a Saturday, and I can remember my mum and dad used to give me a threepenny bit all them years ago to put in the collection tray. And we used to be dressed up in our Sunday best. And unfortunately, me and my brother never went to Sunday school. We used to go and spend our threepenny bits in the sweet shop and then pretend that we'd been and went home. So I've not been, I'm ashamed to say I'm not very good, not been very, very good, really.
Well, it sounds like a confession now.
Well, you started it, mate. Yeah, but my grandma, who I loved, because I left home when I was 14, and my grandma, who was lovely, and I went to live with her, and she used to say, you don't have to go to church to be a good person. And I've always kind of lived my life by that rule, if you like. I tend to... I think that you've got to be good. That's it. That's it. In a way. So I try my best to be a good person.
Yeah, I know. Billy, when did you know that you wanted to be a comic? What was it that, you know? What was your kind of moment where you thought, actually, I'm going to have a go at this?
I still don't know, mate. To be honest, I can't make my mind up. There was a few things that happened. I never set out to be a comedian. My mum had a right big dancing school in Yorkshire. She had the biggest dancing school in Yorkshire. So I was brought up as a child. My dad was a pianist, a very good sort of concert pianist. My mum played piano. She could play by ear brilliantly. You only had to whistle a tune and she could play in it. But my dad was the other way. He couldn't play a note without a sheet of music. My mum used to choreograph a lot of amateur productions in those days. And they were always short of boys. It wasn't fashionable for a boy to be in part of show business or on stage. Mm. And you used to get the mickey taken out of you. So I kept that very secret. So my first appearance was a Siamese twin at the Leeds Empire, which is now gone, as a Siamese twin in The King and I. So I was kind of brought up with that. But regarding comedy, I loved the theatre. I got to love the theatre. And through the amateur operatics, I got a job only when I was about 14 or 15 at the in the Leeds Grand Theatre as one of the crew. And I loved being part of it and backstage and everything. I liked the excitement of it. And somehow I finished up going to Bucklands with another lad that went to my mum's dancing school as a redcoat. And we used to catch people climbing over the fence and then send them back to finish their holidays. So and then after that, we came back and started doing the clubs, you know, the working men's clubs at the time, which was where loads of people started. And then the double act kind of, the musicians in the clubs, this is another reason why I started doing comedy. They used to have an organist and drummer, and I always used to call them Fred and Albert. And they could play the kind of Not Three Times, Amarillo, all those kinds of club standard type things. But when it came to something like a tap routine, to the Sheik of Araby and Song and Dance Man and stuff, they were lost. So I found that if I told a couple of jokes, we could pad the time out and miss out the stuff that we knew they couldn't play. So that was one thing. And then the other time I was at Batley Variety Club, the old Batley Variety Club, which was a massive club, and they had loads of famous people on, Shirley Bassey, the Everly brothers, one drank heavily and the other one smoked heavily. And we condensed the three spots that you used to have to do in a working men's club and put all our best numbers into one sort of half an hour spot.
Right.
It was so physical and tiring. And the audience, I have to say, probably maybe 50% of the audience paid any attention to us whatsoever. It was all like soup in a basket, chicken in a basket. whereas the compere and the comedian in those days could go out and lean on the mic stand with a glass in his hand and a cigarette and tell jokes and get 100% of the audience listening and laughing. And when I saw that, I thought, I can't grow old doing what I'm doing. I want to be doing that. And that attracted me, the kind of mass hypnosis of having everybody in the room, eating out your hand and listening to you and laughing, which is the most important thing to me, is that, as we touched on earlier on, laughter is like a drug to me. And I loved being able to, having the power to make people laugh. It's not never been sort of an ego trip to me. I just want to please people. That sounds a bit...
No, naff, but it sounds right.
It is true. In my case, it's true.
And then, you know, did that come with immediate success, you know, when you were doing it?
Did
you have a few of those? No. tell us about some of those moments.
No, mate, far from it. I've gone through all sorts for my art, if you like. excuse me. I'm getting a cold. I just opened the window and influenza. And it's been a long, hard struggle, but there was a couple of points in my life when things changed. There used to be... in the club program, we used to be a club program that all the clubs used to advertise in and tell the people that were reading the club program who was on and what they did. And it was all abbreviated. So if you were a singer, it would just put Shirley so-and-so, vocalist, or VOC, V-O-C. I'm sorry about this, I'll have to turn it off. If you were a guitar vocalist, it said git voc. If you did comedy, it said git voc com. See what I mean? So mine had a big long list. It said git voc, tap banj for banjo, tap banj com. Right, there's a big long list. And one day I got the club program and it said Billy Pierce com. And I looked at it and I thought, I'm a comedian. all of a sudden people were looking at me as a comedian. I never set out to do that. So gradually over the years, all the other bits, the guitar, the banjo, the ukulele, everything's kind of, and it was the thing that kind of, I loved it anyway, but all the other art stuff went out the way really for me to do my comedy. Has that answered your question? I can't really.
Well, it was that long ago. I can't remember, Billy, but I think so.
Well, I can remember starving in London, living in a place that was £3 a week.
Yeah.
I signed on at Peck and Dole office. I've gone without food. I've gone to butchers and asked for pet food stuff, pet food, old bones and stuff that we could cook up and make a bowl of soup out of, and that kind of thing. You know, it's not been, you know, when people come to my house sometimes, they say, you've got a lovely house. And I say, well, it's not always been like this.
No.
It has been a lot, like a lot of us, we, you know, we started off with nothing. And I always say, I started at the bottom and I like it here.
Billy, is that you got bones from the pet shop for food?
Yes. Yes. If you go into a, you used to be able to go into a butcher and say, have you got any pet food, you know, old scraps for pets, your dog and all that, and they'd give you the bones and stuff for your dog, right? So we used to get that and, you know, boil it all up and put a bit of brown and pulse and corn flour in it and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they weren't the happiest of times, I have to say.
And Bill, tell people about your TV break. It wasn't Opportunity Knocks, was it? I can't remember what it was called, but you got your break on telly, didn't you?
I did. Although I did, not many people know this, but I went on Opportunity Knocks with Huey Green in 1972 as a double act. And we lost to I don't think we were ever going to win, but we kind of played guitars, a pair of us. We had Burton suits on. Old Burton's used to be a tailor's. So we had these Burton suits on and we did the Loving Spoonful, What a Day for a Daydream, on guitars. And then we had a stop break, boom, and we tapped out to play the guitar at the same time. So that, you know, for about a week, we didn't know whether we'd won or not, which obviously we didn't. After that, I went on New Faces, that was another talent show, in 1986. So I started in 1970, so it took me 16 years to be a new face. And I went on there, I got on there about skinning my teeth because somebody had dropped out. And on my heat, I got the highest votes ever. I was on, literally, they rang me up and said somebody had dropped out, and I was on in a couple of days, I was on. And it was like a dream, really. Yeah. And but in the finals, nothing happened at all. I mean, I don't think it was that bad. It wasn't that bad, but I didn't. It took 12 acts to beat me, and I had 6 months' work cancelled. But from then on, somebody saw me on that. A big agency in London, and the year later, I found myself doing a summer season in Bournemouth with Danny LaRue, touring with Cannon and Ball, and all of a sudden it changed. I was doing more theatre work as opposed to the working men's clubs where I'd kind of grown up and learned the trade. I don't know if that answers your question.
It does, Bill, and you know, I love hearing you talking about names like Cannon and Ball and Danny LaRue. I've seen them all. I was brought up on summer season and I miss it, like, because it's not like it used to be, as you will know. But
yes,
but do you miss it, Billy? Do you love that? You know, I mean, the summer seasons at Blackpool, they used to run from May till November, didn't they? And they were twice nightly as well, weren't they?
Yeah, when I first started doing them, it was about 16 weeks, really, was about my time, you know, which is a long, long summer season. And I've worked with so many wonderful people there, and they were great shows. But sadly, they've gone out of fashion, those shows, and it all came to a bit of an abrupt halt when, you know, the alternative guys started coming in, and good luck to them as well. I'm not decrying all that. And I can't complain. I've had a good run, so it's not, you know, but it did change. And I do, I was, funnily enough, I was speaking to Duncan Novell. I don't know if you remember Duncan.
I do.
Well, sadly, Duncan's had a couple of heart attacks and a stroke and all that, but he's still managing to work, but he's very affected by it. You know, he has been affected by it. But I was talking to him about these summer seasons in Blackpool and the pantomimes and things that we used to be able to do. And we were saying how lucky we were to be able to do it. You know, you can't be upset that it doesn't exist anymore. What you can be happy about is the lovely, I mean, I did 20 years in Blackpool. I mean, you can't complain, can I? We've been so lucky to be able to do it. And also, like I say, I met my wife and Blackpool, you know, it's been great to me, Blackpool. It really has. I can't complain, you know. What can I say?
Do you think there's scope for that to ever return? I mean, I know Ken Dodd played the grand, didn't he, every Sunday, but almost till he died. And I still think, I mean, maybe I'm just a nostalgic old so-and-so, but I still think there's an appetite for what I would describe as variety. You know, you're there in end of May, and I think there's still an appetite for that.
Well, I think there is, and I think people like, once again, a good laugh, which, that's what I give them, hopefully. That's my job, and I love it. And as with us, Bobby Davro, I'm working with Bobby, and he's been a mate of mine for a long, long time. And we are, perhaps you'd call us old school now, but, you know, the thing is, people's perception of us is that we're sort of old-fashioned 80s, you know, at our day type of thing. But when you're out there on the green, we make them laugh. That's the thing. It's still there. It's not that we've particularly gone out of fashion. Once we get them in there, we make them laugh, which is the most important thing as a comedian. If you didn't make them laugh, you won't laugh less long, would you?
No, no. And if I can ask just a bit deeper, Billy, I mean, I love comedy. I had a go at it myself to pretty disastrous, but anyway. And a big fan of Les Dawson. I love Les Dawson. And I just think that, you know, within a clown, in a comic, there sometimes there's a darker side, isn't there? You know, Tommy Cooper, Freddie Starr, those kind of guys. And you think you need a bit of, I don't know if it's insanity or madness or, you know, do you think adversity is a key ingredient to humour?
Well, first of all, I won't put myself in the same bracket as somebody like Les Dawson, who I'm a massive fan. And I knew him from the days when I mentioned about I was a stagehand at the Grand in Leeds. And he did pantomime there before he was massive. And he used to practice his out-of-tune piano things and all that. And once again, in those days, the stars didn't talk to the crew. Yeah. They were kind of separate from that. But he always spoke to me. People like Dickie Henderson and all that were very nice to me as a young man. Mm. So I've always admired people like that. I do agree with you that a lot of comedians, without mentioning any names, have problems. And perhaps they need the stardom, that kind of thing, they need it. And feed on it, and once that's taken away, or they start drinking too much or doing other things, and not turning up and letting the fans down and all that side of it. For me, I'm just a working comic rather than a rock star that needs, you know, wrecking hotel rooms and all that sort of thing.
Yeah,
but you're right. A lot of people, I mean, have demons. Like Robin Williams or, you know, these people who are fabulously talented. Mm. But they do say that genius is bordering on insanity, don't they? So I think it's a fine line sometimes. I think I'm lucky that my feet are on the ground and I appreciate what I've got and not what I haven't got and what I've achieved and not what I haven't achieved. Mm. And I hopefully, even in these tough times, I know a lot of my friends, comedians again, that aren't, you know, that are struggling now because they're not working. It's hit them harder than me, perhaps.
Yeah, I was talking to Jimmy Cricket, who We've done a couple of comedy shows at our church, and we'll have to get you there sometime, Billy.
I love Jimmy. Jimmy and his family, I love him. And Frankie Doodle, we used to call him, his son, who's now a priest.
Yeah.
I've known Jimmy and his family for many, many years, and they're absolutely wonderful, lovely people.
He is such a gentleman. But he was saying, just what echoing what you'd said, he said, you know, I'm very fortunate, I've had a fantastic career, but there are a lot of jobbing comedians out there who are, you know, who are living from month to month, and you know, and it's been really tough for them. It's been really horrendous for the stand-up world, hasn't it, really?
Well, also for everybody in show business. I've got, you know, lots of friends that I've met throughout the years and been lucky to meet, talented, lovely people. One girl who's been in the West End, done fabulous work, television work, talented, been to stage school, knows her craft. And she rang me up and said, she was very upset. She was on her hands and knees painting somebody's skirting board to earn some money, you know, doing a bit of painting and decorating, and thinking to herself, is this what it's come to?
Yeah.
Is this what I've worked all my life for, is to paint somebody's skirting board? And my mate from the company manager from Bradford Alhambra that I've done many years of, he's been driving a van for Asda, you know, and all this kind of thing. I wish I could have done a bit more of that, but because of my physical problems, not, you know, I've had 2/3 of my liver out of my spleen and all that, so I was high risk. So I couldn't kind of do anything to help, although I have done what I can. It's been quite amazing during the lockdown and things like that. I've forgotten what the question was now.
Don't matter. It's just lovely talking to you, Billy.
Same to you, Alex. No, same to you, mate.
What do you think about, you know, I mean, I get a bit, I find comedians on telly, Billy, a little bit tedious. You know, there's kind of this pool of them, isn't there, that are trawled out for the shows and stuff. Do you think the BBC would ever be brave enough to, you know, put you on one of their kind of stand-up nights? Because, like you said, you put you in front of the crowd, you'll make them laugh, and funny's funny, isn't it? And sometimes they put people in front of the crowd, and I think, maybe it's just me, but this is not what I'd describe as funny.
I think sometimes it's King's New Clothes. Mm. You know, if somebody tells you it's funny, you're going to sit there and pretend that you're laughing and you don't really get what it's all about. So sometimes it's a bit like that. I'm not so clever as to, you know, I'm just trying to make people, you know, it's not rocket science. If you're asking me the direction that it's gone, then in some ways, yeah, I can't really watch a lot of comedy, because I find, is that your dog? I'll have to bring you my dog in.
He's been annoying him, Billy, listeners. He's been at my feet, and I thought, the only way I'm going to shut him up is if I sit him on my knee, and he likes it.
No, that's fair enough. My dog's a cross between a boxer and a cockapoo. He's a boxer poo. He used to chase anybody on a bike till I took the bike off him, and now he just sits in the cabbages and peas. There's not a single flea on that dog. They're all married with big families. I call him Isaiah, because one eye's higher than the other. He's got an ingrowing tail. You have to look up his bum to see if he's happy. I'll give in on that. To be honest, your dog gets you through this lockdown.
He's
such a character. And Alex, only in the last 2 minutes before I was talking to you, I was on my, I've got a little studio in my house, and I was looking at YouTube, and the moment it came up when I gave my boy, who'd been begging for a dog, for his birthday, and I presented him this cardboard box, and he opened it, and there's this puppy. And he's about 5 or 6 years old now, bless him, and he's lovely. Mm. So, the dogs are brilliant.
They are. He's adorable. So, I forgot what we were talking about, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah, you know, it got to dogs now.
This is a nice, relaxed podcast. Billy, what panto? Well, I know you must love it. You've done it for donkey's years, haven't you? But what is it about Panto that is just? Is it because there's something for everyone? Is that what it is?
I think that's part of it. Yeah, definitely. You can bring all the family can come, you know, from grandmas right down to the little kids. And then, like you say, there's something for everybody. I mean, over the years, pantomime's changed since I first started doing it. Technology-wise, 3D things, all sorts of stuff, animatronics. It's changed a lot. Health and safety stopped me doing all the dangerous things that I used to do. And also, I'm getting a bit old now. Allotments are starting to look attractive. Yes, I think that it's... Once again, I think the beauty of pantomime, again, is that wonderful feeling of making people laugh and enjoy it. And I sometimes, in the wings at Bradford, there's a little hole in the wings, a part of the scenery where you can have a look through the little hole like that, and you can see all the front two rows. And I try and pick, if I'm going to pick on somebody, I pick a lady that I think, or a man that I might think is going to be all right. You can tell by the faces. For instance, one day I was watching the beginning of the show when the goodie comes out and you have to cheer the goodie, and then the baddie comes out and says, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that, I'm going to stop this and all that. So the lady was nudging the kid next to her and saying, you cheer for the fairy. And, you know, boo the baddie. And then by the end of the night, the lady had forgotten all about the kid and was cheering and booing. And that's what it's all about, isn't it? It's involving people and these lovely stories that have got great morals and everything to them. It's about good and evil, isn't it, really, if you kind of look at it, the fairy tales. But that kids love. It's going to be Sleeping Beauty next year, which I'm wondering, because I've seen things on Facebook about you can't wake a lady up by kissing her if she hasn't given you permission. So I'm thinking maybe I could get one of those car horns to wake her up, to keep everybody happy. It's changed. It's a bit like Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs and people getting upset because they're using real dwarfs, and if you talk to dwarfs, they're more than happy to do it. And they love it every minute of it and all that. So I don't know.
Billy, did you ever work with Danny LaRue? I was talking to Jodie Prenger about because she's a Blackpool girl, and she was talking about Danny LaRue at Panto at the Grand. Yeah. And he had this. He had a dog, and when he
Jonty was the dog's name.
Well, she said that when he first came to the Grand, they were like, "Oh, we don't allow any pets in the Grand." And Danny said, "No dog, no Danny."
Absolutely, no. That's true. It's true. Yeah, I didn't like that dog. It was one of those funny. They're like bald. I can't remember what they're called. They look like they have got alopecia or something, and they kind of got clumps of hair.
What was Danny like though, Billy? Did you know?
Yes, I did. I've done a couple of summer seasons, a tour with him when he had Wayne King and all the old crew. Going back a long time, it was Bournemouth Pavilion. He was very kind to me and I got on fantastically well with him. And I couldn't believe, I remember the first time I met him and he had a thing called phlebitis, so he had trouble with his leg. And it was at Bournemouth Pavilion, and through a mistake, my agent, who wanted to make every penny piece he could out of me, made a mistake, and he sent me to Bournemouth a week early. So I had a week early, before rehearsals. So I had a whole week of nothing to do. So I arrived at the theatre and said to the stage manager, I've come to do my band call and rehearse and all that. And he said, it's not till next week. I'd gone a week early. So I looked at the theatre and the stage and I decided I was going to jump in the orchestra pit and all that. And I've got my act all worked out. So when Danny turned up, The first thing I did, I went and knocked on his door, and he invited me in, and he was sat there with his leg in the air on a, like a desk thing, because he'd got this phlebitis. And I said to him, "Mr. LaRue, my name's Billy Pierce, and I'm here to work with you this summer and all." He said, "Hello, Billy, I've heard a lot about you," and all. He's very kind to me. I said, "Would you like to look at my act and what I'm going to be doing?" And he said, "No. You know," he said, I leave that entirely up to you." He said, "You're the comedian. It's not for me to decide what you're doing." No. I said, "But if there's anything at all that you think I'm doing wrong or you're not happy with it, please, you know, tell me, let me know." Well, luckily enough, I didn't upset him. And I managed to give the Jeffrey, whatever his name was, that looked after him for years, that was in the wings. I gave him a stopwatch. I had 18 minutes to do on the show. And I said to him, "Will you time me from the moment I go on till the moment I walk off?" And I was within 30 seconds every night, which pleased him, because a lot of comics don't have the discipline to know when to cut off. So if you're doing well, so if you're doing well in a theatre, the time spreads. If they're laughing and clapping at every joke, you've added 5 minutes on before you know. Mm. So the discipline is to know when to cut. So you have to cut stuff if you're going well. And if you're not going so well, you have to put stuff in to make the time up. Yeah. You know, so if it was a thin matinee where you're not getting that blast of laughter. So he was very happy with me. And then I toured with him on a bus. I was the only straight bloke on the bus, which was a new experience for me. A pantomime I did with him, and one a funny story with Danny. He was Widow Twankey and I was Wishy Washy. And there was a scene before you go into the laundry scene when he puts all the towels and that through the mangle, and the Wishy Washy goes through the mangle himself, right, and comes out flat. Yeah. It's a massive life-size photo and you come out flat. So he'd go, "Now, where's Wishy Washy with those towels?" And I'd run out and say, "Here they are, Mum." And he'd say, "Well, that's a towel for, the bra, that'll make a hammock for two sailors," a right big bra. "That'll make a hammock for two sailors. And then he'd go, "And here's the towel." And he'd feel them and say, "They're not dry yet. We'll have to put them through the mangle." So one day I went running out, "That'll make a hammock for two sailors and all that. Here's the towels." He said, "They're not dry yet. We'll have to put them through the mangle." And I said, "How do you know? He hadn't felt them," right? Because he didn't feel the towels. "So how did you know they weren't dry?" Well, he got a big laugh and he whacked me right across the face, right? And he went, "You naughty boy, put them through the mangle." He didn't like it if I got a laugh when I shouldn't have done. I'd libbing. So I went through the mangle and all that. Well, the next night I went out and he goes, "Here's Mrs. Jones's bra, and make a hammock for two sailors. And here's the towels." And instead of feeling the towels, he got hold of my arm. And you know when you used to give somebody a Chinese burn? Mm. You know, when you twist the arm. And he twisted my arm, gave me a Chinese burn. He went, "They're not dry yet. We'll have to put them through the mangle." I loved him though. He was lovely, Danny. Yeah, I was lucky to be able to work with him. He was a lovely man.
I think I've just asked you a question and I knew the answer to, because I think I've seen you with Danny LaRue in Panto back in the Yeah, I think so.
Blackpool Grand, funnily enough, again.
Blackpool Grand. Do you know what? Well, there's a story behind that. That was my first night away with my good lady wife. I think we came on New Year's Day or something like that, but. Yeah, and just quickly, Billy, just tell me about...
You're not that old.
I'm 51, and I've been with my wife a long time.
Have you? Yeah. Do you think you'll stick it?
Time will tell. Just tell me about Les, Billy, because I am a massive Les Dawson fan. I saw him at the Grand. He was with Eric Sykes in Run For Your Life.
Fabulous.
And I miss him because he was just funny. And his story is just brilliant. He was a skilled comic, weren't he?
Wonderful. Eloquent. Wordsmith. The little story, though, Alex, for you is when poor old Les died, and I'm still friends with Tracy, we did the great the plaque, you know, the it looks like Wedgwood, a plaque, on his house in Lytham. So went there for that. I'd been to his house a few times because my son was pals with his daughter. And then we went to the village hotel and they auctioned off a lot of his personal things. And a man had done an oil painting of Sissy and Ada with Roy Barraclough, you know, the Sissy and Ada
thing.
And I bid for it against Roy Chubby Brown and loads of people, and I paid about $2,000 for it, and I've still got it. And in my old house, it used to be in my hallway in my old house 20 years ago, and every night when I used to come home from the clubs, I used to tell him what sort of night I'd had.
That's a lovely story, that.
It's true, it's a true story. I've still got that painting. It must be worth a fortune now.
Billy, did you do... I had some questions. I've completed. Did you do his gala tribute night after he died?
No.
Did you not? Were you not on that bill?
No. Where was it? At the Grand?
Was it the Grand? Yeah.
Yeah. No. Maybe I was working, maybe I didn't get asked. You know.
Yeah.
But I don't remember that. But I do remember that day very, very, very well. And I was. Once again, he was another man who I met when I was a stagehand at the Grand, as I mentioned earlier on. And years later, I did Blankety Blank when Les was doing it. And he remembered me. He remembered me and was very kind to me. He didn't take the mickey out of me. He was kind to me. I was frightened of him. He was so, you know, he was what I call a proper comic, not like me pretending. You know, one of these, he was a real, one of the real ones, you know.
I think you're doing yourself an injustice, Billy. I think you...
Oh, definitely not, mate. I'm definitely not. No.
I know, because I know I love Blackpool, I love the theatre world, and I know how many people you've made laugh over the years, and that is such a gift, and I've seen you a few times, and you've always made me laugh. So the future, Billy, have you got a full diary for the summer then? Is it looking more positive?
No, I've got a couple of gigs. Like I say, the Winter Gardens in Blackpool, which I'm really looking forward to. And I'm not doing the whole night myself. I'm part of a show. So I think I'm only doing 15, 20 minutes. But after all this time off, twiddling my thumbs and wondering if I can still get back out there and get back on the horse... to be on that stage, even though it's socially distanced and they've probably got masks on, and it's going to give me, and I'm only going to do 15, 20 minutes, close the first half. It's a great way for me to get back into it. But then in June, because I've done Bradford Alhambra for 21 years in pantomime, and I do an adult show and all.
Yes.
I'm doing, you don't talk about that, do you?
What's your favourite joke from that? No,
I won't get it up now. Anyway, I'm doing at St George's Hall, which is near to Bradford. It's actually bigger, and they've spent millions of pounds on it. So that seats about 1,600 people. So I'm doing the opening night of it in June. But it will be socially distanced. And just one half. I'll do in about an hour and 15. So they're not going to the toilets interval time and all that, and the bars are shut and all that kind of thing. So it'll be an hour to an hour and 15 minutes, just one spot. So I'm looking forward to that. And that's going to be more adult. When I say adult, it's I don't want you to get the wrong idea. I'm not... effing and blinding, all the time, and all that. I don't want to decry anybody else, but it's perhaps subject matter that you wouldn't want the kids to hear and stuff like that. I try my best not to offend people. That's the whole point. I don't want to offend or upset or, you know. So there's lots of subjects that I don't even touch upon. Mm-hmm. you know, like football or, you know, religion, homophobia, all that sort of stuff is a bit of a no. Racism, all that. It's not, it's just about fun, really. And but also, to use a bit of a religious phrase, irreverent, to cock a snoot at things and all that and say things that perhaps you wouldn't normally say, but not to upset people, just to try and make people laugh.
Yeah.
It's a fine line that you tread doing comedy, and it's getting more and more difficult.
I know.
As we speak, what people are prepared to laugh at. And rightly so, when you look back in time, you know, when I first started doing comedy, it was a whole different world in those days.
Yeah.
Billy, it's been, I can't tell you, it's been brilliant talking to you. You are one of the guys, when I was a younger guy, that made me laugh. And, you know, I've had a love affair with stand-up. I love it as a genre. I love it as an art, and it is an art. And I love watching the craft of it because I appreciate it. And to meet you and talk about it, it's just been fantastic. I'm so grateful for your time. I hope things get easier and you get out on the road, and I look forward to seeing you in Blackpool. That'd be brilliant.
And no, come and say hello if you do. But also, Alex, thank you very much. You've been very kind to me. And I admire the work that you do as well and what you do for people. I understand all that. I've had terrible problems recently. My mum died during the COVID, off COVID. I've known people, so we couldn't have the funeral. I wasn't allowed to go and see her. But sometimes we need people like you. That's what I'm saying.
Thank you,
Bill. So thank you very much for all the things that you do, even though I may not be, you know, the most religious person in the world.
We need
you, mate.
That's all right, and I'm sorry that you had to go through that with your mum in such tough circumstances. But yeah, it's been tough for everyone. So yeah,
it has, love. Yeah, it has.
Billy, God bless you, fella. Thanks so much for your time. And anybody who's watching this on the Godcast or the podcast, there's loads more interviews like this. Just Google the Godcast and you'll find them there. So Bill, thanks for your time, and we'll catch up soon.
Thank you, Alex. Bless you, mate. Thank you very much.